Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
And we are back. It's an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
And I am Louis Fertel. And again, I'm living in a universe where there's no Oscars to talk about anymore. So I feel like I'm in like a perpetual post-apocalyptic grayscape, and there's nothing left for me. So I'm happy to be here, but also dismal. How about that?
Well, hopefully less dismal, because we have one of our favorite co-hosts who is back. Returning guest co-host Michael Arsenault. Hi, it's good to have you here again.
It's good to be here. And Louis, hopefully you'll consider me American Nonfiction, and then that kind of helps it out. But yes, I'm very happy to be here.
That's you.
Okay. Shout out to Cool.
I will do exactly that. Yes.
Yes. No, I was so happy for Cord. It's so weird. I mean, I guess everybody experiences this when you known someone for years and they win an award or something like this. But you always forget just how many people they also know who you know, especially Cord having worked in the media like we did for so long. It's just like when you see the Instagram post of like him holding his Oscar, and then the comments from everybody in it, you're like, I know all these damn people.
Right.
Of course, and we all know Cord for years, you know?
Yes.
So that's nice to see.
You and Cord are my heroes out the media ghetto. Yes, inspiration.
I'm in the audio ghetto, as Azealia Banks told me one time, the brokest form of media.
Of course she did.
And you've made it. Now, you know, this is your third book that you have out. Now, I finally bought some Jordans, which I love as a title, although I would never expect you to not have plenty of Jordans like in your closet in general.
Didn't grow with all the means, but we making it a little bit later than ever. It gets greater later. Shout out to Bevy. Yeah, there we go.
So this is your third book. What subjects in this great collection of essays were you... I guess I'll say surprised to talk about? You're three books in. I'm sure you're talking about things you never even anticipated you'd once write about.
Yes. Honestly, I really wanted this book. It initially had a different title. I kind of was going for an entirely different vibe. I don't want to say like victory lap in any way, but I just, in theory, I wanted to write about being in a much better place than life, because my first two books were a lot heavier. But the reality is, like, I just was kind of dealing with a lot of grief. And then the plague happened, and I'm very honest about how that impacted me. And what's not included in the book, but what is now kind of like obviously come out, is that my mom was battling cancer while I was finishing the book, and she since passed away. So it's been really a challenge. The book is a lot darker than I wanted it to be, but I think, you know, for the better, because I'm being really honest about where I'm at, and I'm trying to still end on a hopeful note, even if life hasn't been like the kindest in the last few years.
No, what I love about the book too is we've gotten this familiarity with you as a writer. I said this before we started recording, I love your writing, and I think it's so funny and moving, and I love people getting to know you as well. You know, you opening this book talking about how you're interacting with Don Lemon, Kevin Hart, Lee Daniels, people who you've criticized before in your writing, but also people who've read your other two books and maybe not even knowing that writing, like they're getting to know you as a fuller person as well, and just sort of like interactions you're having with life and people who you interact with in the media. So I think that's great to be able to unfold that into a third book.
I really appreciate that. And I'm honestly hoping that Toni Braxton unblocks me as a result of this. That is like really
She
my
should!
She should! To.
I remember back in the day, Toni did follow me. And one time I just tweeted something. I said, girl, I need that album Libra. Like, Black Ground needs to unlock it put it on streaming. It's finally on streaming now. But I remember she tweeted something like, yeah, I want it out too. Shout out to Tony.
Shout out to Tony.
Michael, do you have any sort of favorites who have blocked you over the years based on just any sort of criticism you've leveled one way or another?
You know, honestly, no. But I guess the one that I was like, well, I earned it and it's fine. Kenya Moore, maybe. Although I tried to...
Now, you know, that's my girl.
I know. Well, for the record, I've given her credit in the later seasons, these dismal seasons of being the bright spot in Dark Times. But she was a good villain when she joined the show, and I just responded in kind. But one day I just looked, it was like, oh, I'm blocked. Okay. And I did Carlos King's show. I was like, well, tell your girl to unblock me. I've been nice. And he was like, well, I tried. But it's fine. Kenya Moore will be it, but it's okay. I live. But Tony hurts, though.
Yeah. I mean, Tony would hurt. You know, unblock my heart.
Nicely Please. Done. I was wondering when we'd get there. Yeah.
In seven whole days, ideally.
You are man enough for her. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes. And I can take the heat, but unbreak my heart, love.
And also, it's like when a reality star blocks you, that's like kind of part of their job. You know what I mean? Like to act up online or whatever. When someone like Tony does, it's like, no, let me just have this parasocial thing with you and your lovely music. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Like Love and Hip Hop stars have been mad at me for years. So it kind of like you take it on the chin. But when like a living legend that I used to, you know, as I mentioned in the book, I used to write fake ass baby face songs when I was like 8. I was obsessed with Toni Braxton. And before puberty stole my voice, I thought I could have been an R&B singer. So this is like cuts deep for me.
Puberty rarely described as a thief. I'm glad that's out in the world now. Yeah.
But you know what? You were in good company in that first essay because you cannot be a gay black writer without having said something about Kevin Hart at a certain time in the past. All right? You know, we just had to do it.
I mean, ultimately, like, Toni Braxton hurts the most, and that's why it's tinged around that. But I was warned, I guess, that one day you're going to be in rooms with these people, as I imagine you both can, like, attest to. And I guess I kind of, in theory, knew that would happen. But what is it like when you're in the position of some of these people basically could help change the trajectory of your life? Mm-hmm. But are you honest? Or was like, yeah, I talked about you because you did something really wild. And fortunately, in those circumstances, it actually worked out well because I actually got to talk to them and say, this is the place I was coming from. But you usually won't get that. So that's why I keep putting out like, someone please tell Tony. Like, I can accept Janae Aiko blocking me forever. And I'll just keep using the sound bowls and her music to help me go to sleep. But yeah, I think... And as a result, I've kind of like necessarily like lowered my, I don't tweet as much anymore because I just personally hate the outlet. But just generally speaking, I don't think it's like the best medium to get my point of view across, which is why I'm glad I have books now. So you have to be able to read to hate me.
Even setting that bar, you know what? I think you are saving yourself a lot of grief there. Yeah.
The insurrectionists are never going to see that you call them roaches in your book, okay? They can't read.
Roach, so. Great insult, by the way. A roach. It's so specific. It's so like vermin, but without saying the word vermin. Roach is like crunchier.
Well, it's exciting to have you here, and we always love hearing your thoughts on culture and everything else that is going on. So we will be right back with more Keep It. We're going to discuss there's some new music out from people we love, like Ariana Grande and Kacey Musgraves, people we have complicated feelings about, like Justin Timberlake. And we also have a wonderful interview with the delightful Leslie Bibb. Lewis and I talked to her about her new Apple TV series, Palm Royale. So we will be right back with more Keep It. If the government bans TikTok, what are you going to do with the thousands of dollars you'll save not buying random kitchen products at 2 a.m.? Well, I have an idea. Pay tribute to your favorite podcast and snag some Keep It mugs, hoodies, and even keychains in the Cricut store. Our merch features our gorgeous new logo, and unlike a lot of things you buy on TikTok, it will actually show up when you order it. Go to Cricut.com/store to shop. All right, now that we are out of award season, there's a lot we need to catch up on, so we're doing a music roundup. First, let's chat about Ponytail. Michael, what are your thoughts about her in general, and what do you think of her new album that is out?
I have been a Ponytail since The Way came out, so we love Ariana.
Okay, exactly.
I was waiting. Whenever there's new music from her, I'm like excited. Although I will say, my first listen of Eternal Sunshine, maybe even the first three, I wasn't like wowed. I was like, oh, this is cool. It sounded a lot like Robin, Imogen Heap. I was like, I get it. Now I have a better appreciation. I'm getting there. The Boy Is Mine has a bop. I wasn't overwhelmed the way I normally am with a Ponytail album, but I'm getting there. Because, yes, I'm just happy she's back. I'm surprised it's so short, but I'm trying to live in gratitude because I'm surprised we even got this 30 minutes out of her.
And I guess the new thing is everybody has an extremely short album now. Like, we're like gone are the days where you get like the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, where there's like not only the 16 tracks, but then the other four that are on the part of the CD you can't even like detect on the from the outside.
Yeah, I'm trying not to be like get off my lawn about it, but I can tell that's like they're all doing shorter albums so they can just get more loops to like game the charts, which is not necessarily their fault, but I'm like, I want a longer album, but I get it. Again, I'm trying to be grateful.
The charts are annoying right now. Like, it's just, I'm not saying the metrics once upon a time were like all above board and like whatever, but like now it's just like there are certain things you do and like having short songs is a huge part of that.
Yes, I'm over the 2 minute song, but like, I get it. That's just where we are right now.
Yeah, it's giving original recipe Beatles in like 1962 with like a minute 58 song.
I love that.
Unacceptable. Yeah.
I always forget, when I'm listening to a vinyl or something, right? A vinyl. The fact that each side, could only fit a certain amount, which is why sometimes you would have people releasing vinyls with, it's like there's four in there. But now just with you can upload anything, it would stand to reason that it could be as long as you want. I mean, and sometimes they are not. I sent a friend a song from Flo, their new one, Walk Like This, which I love. Also people who are vocalists, like Ponytail. And my friend was like, it's really good, but it was kind of long. And I was like, 3 minutes and 18 seconds is long to you?
Absolutely
not. I'm like, baby, One More Time songs are like 5 minutes, okay? Like, we used to listen to music.
Yes, 318 is too long. Ira, that is so depressing. That is so depressing.
Girl, a fucking Motown song is 3 minutes long. Come on.
It's also the idea that, I don't know, when you used to be driving to school or something, right? Or commuting, you could, I don't know if you two used to do this, but, like, you would measure, like, the distance in getting to places, and you're sort of like, I can listen to three songs, that's like 16 minutes or something, and now it's like that trip is what, like you can listen to someone's whole album.
Yes. I can walk to my car and the song is over. Yes.
I also think like another thing is because everything is so Spotify'd, whatever, that an album a lot of the time feels like it's often like there's not a lot of key changes or like everything belongs in one playlist kind of. And I feel like that means albums are now less versatile sounding than they once were. You wouldn't get lots of stylistic changes in the same album the way you once did. With almost every album I had growing up, feel like there was at least one crazy track or one song that didn't seem like it belonged in a good way. I will say about the Ariana Grande album, speaking of Get Off My Lawn and sounding 100,000 years old, I'm sorry, all of her music sounds the same to me. I'm waiting for her to sound a new type of... There's like, the dance music on this is like, as I said before, is like a good in a Soul Cycle way. Like, I've got a pedal to something, may as well be this.
Soul Cycle?
No.
Baby, Lewis, these songs have 8 counts, okay? You need a little bit more rhythm than you need in a Soul Cycle class.
But I mean, yes and is what I'm talking about. Not the rest of the album. Not the rest of the album.
Okay.
But to me, it's like, and by the way, my favorite song of hers is The Way, her first single. I don't know, like, isn't this just what people expect an Ariana Grande album to sound like? I don't know. Like, it has like a couple of good breakup-y moments in it, but it kind of slips off me.
For me, I feel like it is giving... Okay, so what's actually interesting about this album to me is that when she first came out, there were all the comparisons to Mariah. She had the Emotion cover. Yeah. Everyone was like, Mariah, your tether is coming for you.
Yes.
It might have just been you, by the way, tweeting that directly.
Actually, side note about, I think I brought this up on the podcast before, that when you talk specifically about like a celebrity acknowledging you and then quickly unacknowledging you, one time, it was mid-pandemic or whatever, I'm laying on the couch and I got a follow from Mariah Carey.
Help.
And I went to her page. By the time I'd gotten to the page, like, the unfollow had already happened. Ooh. It was an accident. Mariah was on her phone.
I speak for the both of you when I say it's for the best. I'm sorry. You do not know what I want to know about that one.
I'd be terrified. I don't know how Billy Eichner does it.
No, exactly. You know? It's scary. Yeah, like, right.
What would you do with Mariah Carey's number in your... There are celebrities who I've either worked with or done a thing with who've given me their number, and it's like I've never sent them a text.
No,
because
of course.
Because of my... Yeah. You know, I'm like, what am I supposed to...
It's so embarrassing. Like, hi, I'm reaching out to you. Yeah, it's just, ew.
But this new album, getting back to the Mariah Carey comparisons, it almost feels a little like later Mariah to me. It's giving Memoirs of an Imperfect Angel almost, you know, where it's very... What I'm liking about this is the vocals on this album. And I'm thinking she's doing a lot of really fun things with her voice. Like, she's singing down on the album, especially, like, the first couple tracks, you know? I will say the ending of the album falls off a bit for me after the Robin song, but that run from, you know, Bye straight down to Yes And.
Bye, I also
enjoy. It's great. Bye, Don't Want to Break Up Again. I mentioned it last week that the DJs in New York, like Carrie Nation, play that. Like, they played it again at this party on Sunday, and it was just like the people dancing to it. It was like, it feels of the moment. It feels like it was just nice seeing people dance to it and knowing the lyrics to even just this song already. When did it come out Friday? You know, like, that's the fun, and that was the Mariah of it all. Like, it feels fun and sexy, but I don't know. There's a thing about Ariana, to go off of what Lewis was saying, where it's not like, I don't think all her music is the same to me, but there is sort of this weirdness in trying to figure out who Ariana Grande kind of is. She's been different versions, but not like a Madonna sort of like reinventing sort of way. It just sort of seems like she sometimes appears and she's just a different person, but it's not like she's actively decided this is a new era I'm in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's... I love that. I can tell what Lewis means when he says it all sounds the same on this album. Like, I will say, I think she actually is doing little things differently, which I do appreciate, but it's kind of like the same thing differently throughout parts of the album. So it doesn't stick out until you're while. Like, yeah, it doesn't, it's not, it's a difference and I appreciate it, but it's sort of not like a Madonna or honestly even like a Mariah, more like when she just a hard stand. Cause I actually, that Memoirs comparison is apt to me, but I will say Memoirs just has like a wittiness to it and like a humor that's innately Mariah.
It's her funniest album.
Right.
For sure. It's her funniest.
And that livens it up in a way. Yeah.
Ariana's never really funny to me. She's funny to me in interviews. Like, she can be funny. And I think, like, when I worked at MTV once, I got to watch her do the rehearsals for the VMAs for the side-to-side performance. And just hearing her interact with her dancers and stuff, I was like, this girl's funny as hell. But the music, I would say, isn't funny.
You know who is like that? Adele. Where, like, every time she opens her mouth, I'm like, you are, like, for a celebrity, world-class funny. And again, we always talk about how British people just have some sort of knack. Like, they've been given a gift, and that's just the way it is. But in the music, it's like, man, she is not funny one time in the music. Ariana, there's at least some, like, romantic regrets and stuff where it almost, like Thank You Next has a bit of a wit to it, but I don't think that's, like, typical for her songs. One thing I will say about this album, people make this complaint a lot. I wouldn't say this is chief among my complaints about Ariana Grande. She is enunciating a lot more. I do feel like I'm less lost on the lyrics than I once was. And I think the lyrics are kind of important to the album, so it's nice to see her make that change.
The rain in Spain, okay? She.
Oh my God. Yes. Let's get her and Colonel Pickering together. I would love to see that. Yeah.
She is enunciating more because she used to come across to me like, you're hitting Mariah's notes, but it's giving Tony's mumbles. Tony, please don't block me. Don't enunciate. But yes. She's sounding it out.
Without the woo, you know, that Tony throws in there. All right, well, speaking of someone else who has had a storied career in music and many different iterations of themselves, Justin Timberlake is back. I will say...
Now, you probably stan him more than the rest of us do, correct?
I know. I've you know what? I do forgive white men. a bit too I swiped the Tamara card a bit too much. But I will say, even with the defense of him, and even with you know, maybe anticipating like this comeback more than other people, I did sort of like stumble into discovering that the album was even out on Friday, just because I go to New Music Friday on Spotify and I'm like, oh, it's here. And I listened to it, and honestly, he left the woods.
Right, thank God.
He did leave the woods.
So that's great, okay? He was like, okay, I'm not trying to connect with, you know, Trump's America anymore. I don't even know what the fuck he was doing on the whole
Less
In the
firewood.
Woods thing anyway.
Great.
It was just like everybody in that period was trying to do a whole like, I'm natural, I'm like, you know, rebrand or whatever. This was, I was like, okay, yes, you are from Memphis. You are a white boy who likes this kind of music. Make this kind of music. Are there any, you know, songs on it that are amazing as like a Rock Your Body? Or like a sexy back? No. But it's a fine album.
He was on Kimmel this week and he performed No Angels. And I thought that was like a pretty standard bop in the catalog of things we actually do enjoy from him. I will say, and of course I've never been a super fan of his, even during the era when it was truly considered uncool to say you didn't like him. I just want to say that that was an era, even though we're in this other period now where the opposite is true. It is kind of a tall order for him to make a new dance album, because as much as he like owned that once upon a time in like 2007, it's a pretty slim lane. And I think to come up with a new version of that, it's like almost any decision he could make would sound dated, because even hearing his voice takes you back to that time. You know what I mean? And I'm just saying, like, in 1983 or 1981, when like Kool and the Gang owned dance or something, nobody was expecting them in 1999 to come out with like relevant dance music. You know what I mean? Just like that, trends in that area change so much. You know, what we dance to now is just not the same as what we danced to then. That said, it does feel like he's a little bit maybe ashamed and sort of going with lower key version of what he once was, because he doesn't want to be seen as cringe. And I feel like that's sort of his whole MO right now. Like, just let me in the door. Let me make music that, like, you can kind of hear in the background, but I won't try to command all the attention.
Him and I think about him and Usher, not to lump them in, but they're both men getting older, trying to release new music. Yeah. I actually think, can't believe I'm saying this, Justin maybe did a better overall album to me than Usher did. And actually, Justin sort of made the album I wish Usher had made, which I think would have helped him ride his resurgence better. I like Infinity Sex, Liar. There are a few songs that I actually like. It's a perfectly fine album, but I actually think it's great to be at his age and still make music that I can enjoy. I'm not as forward as I would like, but it's fun. And he didn't bother me. I will say maybe the setup wasn't that great, because the first single did not wow me, kind of just came and went. But it is fun. And I've always enjoyed Justin Timberlake's music, but I've known since the very beginning that he could be annoying and that eventually that mouth would catch up with him, because I've been a firm backer of Britney and Janet way back. So I just, even when he launched, I was like, get off 106 and Parsons and stop talking about her. But I do like the album enough. I don't know how much I'll revisit it, but there are at least those three songs that I mentioned, I will be playing those for the rest of the year. And if he manages to wow me back, then cool. But yeah, Justin, it's better than that last album. Man of the Woods, I did not see it for outside of Montana. I did wear out Montana. I still do. But I like that he's at least in the right direction. I kind of, though, wish, I don't know, maybe, I'm glad he worked with Danger and Timbaland. I think they actually brought something out of him. I'd be curious to hear him work with different producers to see what that can sound like. But the album was enough to be like, all right, Justin, you keep making music. I didn't want to go back into my Wendy Williams and be like, just sing the hits. I want to give people the chance to, like, give me something new. But, like, sometimes I'm like, I don't know. But, no, he did all right, which is good for him, to be honest, because the people are mad at him.
Yeah, it is, like, also, I mean, like, in a way that kind of Janet became, like, it is a shockingly profane album for him, I will say. And
yeah,
I feel like
is.
That's his one, like, artistic decision he made that was, like, kind of a new direction. But at the same time, I am a little surprised how low the reviews are for this album. Like, there's barely one that, like, is over 50 on Metacritic. Like, I would say it's, like, a firm, like, 64 album, you know, like in the green, barely, but, like, you know, respectable, whatever.
You know, I give it a 72.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, what's interesting too, I was recently giving a friend a playlist of Steely Dan songs because they were like, they put one in their Instagram story. And I was like, oh, I love this song, Glamour Profession. And they were like, I actually really don't know that much about Steely Dan. I was like, I sent them a playlist of songs. And then when you see that, you know, when you think about their career, like in the 80s and 90s and the 70s, you see like them releasing an album like, you know, in 2000 or something. And then you always sort of have to think, you know, artists are going to keep releasing music if they want to. And at what certain point are you expecting them to be innovating anymore or just sort of like making out music that feels good to them, that is good to their fans or like what they want to say at that particular time, you know? And I think... maybe it's just because we came up in like an MTV age and, you know, like the social media age. And, you know, also we are people who stan female artists as well, who are constantly have to be, I guess, more innovative and stuff. But certainly once you get to a point as an artist, aren't you just sort of like making what you maybe want to make, put it out there, hope people are buying it. But it's like, you can't really expect to have each of your albums be an event anymore when you're 20-something plus years into a career, you know, unless you're Beyonce or Madonna, you know?
Right. Speaking of that, by the way, I don't know if either of you have heard the new Kacey Musgraves album, but I will say it's not really an album for me, even though I think the production is a lot... It's like feathery soft and very like listenable and like has kind of a feeling. You just said Steely Dan, but like this, my favorite songs on it remind me of like The Birds or like Bread, like easy listening of the 60s and 70s. But there's not much in the way of hooks and there's not much in the way of memorable lyrics anymore. But I am, for her, happy she seems to be choosing a direction she wants to go in. And it's not just for an algorithm. Like, it's not just for, you liked what I did on Golden Hour, here comes Golden Hour 2 or 3, because that also is depressing, you know? So even if she's still doing this sad, melancholy, light, poetic regret thing that she did on the last album, I think the production is improved. And I think she sounds great. So maybe I will revisit this album in the future and get more from it that way. And because I can respect it and I respect her so much. I love her as a writer and I love her as a vocalist. But I'm surprised. This is the second album in a row where I would say like I won't listen to it as much. Are you a fan of Kacey Musgraves, Michael?
I love her voice and I think she's a great songwriter. I haven't listened to the album in full. I did hear a few songs. One I thought was really, really pretty. The title escapes me. Forgive me, Kacey. But I need to finish, but yeah, I kind of got that vibe when I was listening to it. I was like, I don't think this is going to wow me and I'm kind of already distracted. Let me just, when I can really focus. To your point about Justin, to be in your 40s and you don't necessarily have to be innovative. You just have to be good at what you do. And what I do appreciate about it to him, I'll give him credit about this, is that he doesn't sound like he's trying too hard. There are moments on the Usher album where I'm like, ooh, stop. You're Usher. You don't need to do this. What is this big song? Why did you call this person? Just go talk to Jermaine and Brian Michael Cox. I do like when artists know who they are and kind of own their sound and just kind of execute it as best they can wherever they're at in their career. I get that more from what I heard from Kacey's new album and Justin and that Usher one, because I really was rooting for Usher before even the unforgivable photo. But, you know. Yes.
I've appreciated that Kacey is in her lane and making music that I will, you know, listen to it again in full. And I'm sure I'll find like a couple songs to pick out, even though I actually really don't listen to that last one at all.
Yeah,
you know, I don't think I have a single thing I really like enjoy on it. And it's just fun. It's always interesting when that divide happens, you know, with your other gay friends who are pop music minded, because, you know, at a certain point, you know, my friends in my group chat who, like, when we liked Casey at first, now when they're bringing up, like, the new Casey, like, Casey's new album's out, or, like, Casey tickets on sale, I'm like, y'all enjoy doing that. I've seen her concert twice.
Yeah.
I've seen her at concert twice. I thought she was fucking amazing both times. Back in LA, but you know,
funny girl.
And also a very funny celebrity.
Yeah,
you know, so it would be nice to have her back and have, you know, fun interviews or something with her. You just see that personality that I like about Casey Musgraves. But, you know, as far as the music, I'm just going to let it exist where it does, which is not where I'll be.
No, it's like Bjork is one of my favorite artists. She has full decades of space where I don't like personally what she put out. Like, oh, I don't need to listen to the acapella Nordic thumping album you just did or whatever, you know, like
Nordic thumping is the best way to describe that album.
Yeah.
The Triumph of the Heart on that album, really good. We're talking about Medulla, by the way. But no, it's like I respect this moment for her. And you know, it's like when Joni Mitchell did like her rock album in the 80s, it's like, great for you, I need to get away from this, you know.
All right. That is our music roundup for the week. When we are back, Lewis and I chat with the wonderful Leslie Bibb about her new Apple TV series, Palm Royale. And after that, we'll be back with more Michael Arsenault. Keep It is brought to you by Barefoot Dreams. Lewis?
Yes?
When you see footprints in the sand, that was when I carried you in my Barefoot Dreams robe.
Now, is that a Leona Lewis song? No?
If you want to bring coziness into your life, you turn to Barefoot Dreams, especially now as the brand is celebrating their 30th anniversary. With those 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams celebrates being the originators of everyone's favorite luxe home blanket. And while many have attempted to duplicate their blankets, robes, and more, Barefoot Dreams' fabrication and quality cannot be replicated, so don't believe the dupes. Girl, this blanket is it.
I effing love this blanket. I'm thinking about it right now, and I want to jump in my bed, which is sponsored by something that we'll do another ad for momentarily. Get ready. There's a reason why Barefoot Dreams has been on Oprah's favorite things list 6 times. Jesus, get a life, Oprah. My God. Dressing head to toe in Barefoot Dreams is the key to comfort, as their collection of ultra-soft robes, loungewear, and accessories are made with premium materials. Their products make the perfect gifts, too. I throw this thing on. I wear it like a shawl. I look exactly like Ellen Burstyn. And I am the coziest a human being can be. Because, by the way, it's still that time in Los Angeles where it's like pretty mild outside and then your apartment is cold. I can't explain it. I don't know things like basic science. For Keep It listeners, you can get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with the code KEEPIT15. Don't miss out on Barefoot Dreams soft, soothing fabrics that will bring luxury to your life.
Having a team feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 4/22 through 4/28. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
Our guest today is one of our favorite scene stealers. She slips seamlessly from comedy to drama and everything in between in the likes of Popular, where I first saw her and became obsessed, to Talladega Nights, Iron Man, The Babysitter, and now Apple TV's star-studded new series, Palm Royale, We are thrilled to welcome to Keep It the delightful Leslie Bibb.
Guys, that is a really nice intro. I'll take it. Thank you for that. You know who came with came to our screening of Palm Royale last week?
Who?
The one and only Miss Carly Pope.
Oh, get out.
Okay, a reunion.
Yes. A reunion. She's the greatest. She's still like one of my best friends.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. She looks like she's so beautiful. It's like I just want to punch her in the face because she's so, just as she gets older, I'm like, she still looks like Carly. I mean, she's so, you know, I can still see like baby Sam in there, but like, she's just a beautiful woman. And she's one of the kindest, most thoughtful, most generous human beings on the planet.
Speaking of these lovely qualities, I'm reading about you interacting with your Palm Royale castmates. And it sounds like literally every single one of these people was like a highlight of your life. Like just the most awesome cast. First of all, awesome actors. And I've said this before on the show. I think Kristen Wiig is the best actor in the history of Saturday Night Live. Just like she slips seamlessly into whatever she does. And there's always like something specific about her she brings that it's like so real.
I think the thing about what happens with a lot of these people when they're like comedians or you come from SNL, or they just are known as comedians. And she is like a real, legitimate, deeply moving actor. Like there's stuff that you're going to see in this show that she does, like by episode 10, that I watched it and I was like, if they don't give you a fucking Emmy, I'm gonna burn somebody's house down. Like it just was, she was doing such deep, deep work. And at the same time being funny. And if you know, I mean, great comedy comes from great darkness. And so to just watch her so elegantly sort of walk that tightrope, she's incredible. And she's a really generous actor. Because some comedians can be not so generous, you know, because they're just waiting for you to shut up so they can do their next bit. And Kristen's never like that. Kristen, Will, they're all like, they're just yes and with you. You know, like if you start something, they're just ready to throw the ball back and forth, which is incredible. I think Kristen is really, she's something truly special. Mm. I mean, she is like a Carol Burnett, if you will.
Truly.
Who is lingering in this show, if people don't know. Carol Burnett is also a part of this show.
Yeah. I like you saying lingering.
Well, you're kind of figuring out what she's doing for the first couple episodes.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. She lingers for a while. I mean, that was the moment. Like, I grew up watching the Carol Burnett show. I'm clearly a daft child because I thought it was happening in real time. I didn't know I was watching like something from the 60s. Like, I don't know what was wrong with me, but I was just so rapt by her and the show and this woman and what she was doing. That and Tracy Ullman, I think, were two really like influential things in my life. But when Carol, the first time she walked into the trailer, I literally fell on the ground. And she was like, you're insane. But then we did a table reading. And when you see the show, Miss Carol Burnett does not have, she is in a state, if you will, in the first few episodes. And she came to that table read to moan. And that was it. And I was like, that's what a professional is. That's like the bar of like what everybody, you know, I mean, most actors are like, where's my next line? Where's my next line? And she can make like a grunt and a moan funny. And that's like incredible to watch. I mean, her side eye can slice you in two. Like, I mean, instinctually, I have a scene where I meet her and it's down the episode. And I didn't realize the director was like, do you realize you're curtsying to her? And I said, I am. I said, oh, good. It works for the scene. But I didn't even realize, like, I was instinctually, like, curtsying to this woman because you just can't help yourself. It's Carol
Burnett. Nature's forcing you to supplicate to this woman.
Yes, right.
Collapsing you in her direction.
Totally. Collapsing you. Yeah, like, kiss the ring.
I hope, actually, this show, by the way, reacquaints people with the fact that Carol Burnett, also a fabulous actor. So if you haven't seen The Four Seasons, or I was reacquainted with her in a movie called Pete and Tilly the other day. There's a lot to investigate about Carol Burnett that isn't just her variety show. And I hope people Remember
yes,
that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen Peyton Toby.
Yeah, with Geraldine Page. Great movie. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Speaking of comedy, you know, you are so good at doing comedic roles, but it's so interesting when I brought up Popular earlier. I want to ask how you develop your comedy chops, really as an actor, because I feel like if people don't remember Popular, when it started on the WB, the first episode, it's funny, but it is really just, you know, giving teen drama, you know, teen soap that was on WB at the time. By the time you get to season two, the Ryan Murphy of it all is finally, like, it's like he got to come out of his cocoon and become Ryan.
Yeah.
And it's completely funny and completely off the wall by the time you're in season two. So did that show sort of, you know, the change of it help you with just going from genre to genre?
I don't know. I think, you know, we were so young and you're so fearless and you're just like, you just are like, okay, yeah. I mean, honestly, I think the greatest thing for comedy came from really where I studied acting when I was in school in New York, which is Meisner, which is, you know, there's a lot of it. You start in Meisner with, you just do this repeating exercises. And essentially, when you could compare it to improv, it's yes and. So you're always like taking it off the other person. You're listening. You're staying in the moment. And you're just taking it off of that person. It's sort of like the base level of where it starts when you start. It's these repetition exercises. And I really think that sort of groundwork at that school, studying with Maggie Flanagan, was my teacher at Esper, William Esper, at the William Esper Acting Studios, sort of was like, just gave me my diving board. So, cause you can put it to anything. And then I don't know. I remember when we did Talladega, I don't think anybody thought I was like particularly funny on Popular. I mean, but the show was so funny and the show was so crazy. And it was it was like its own world and its own vibe, you know, and was so impactful. And still to this day, when I walk down the street, people will stop me and be like, I love that show. It was so helpful for me as like a teenager, which is incredible that Ryan, I hope Ryan knows that, because like really people think of Ryan and they think of Glee, but I always go like, to me, I always thought Popular was way more interesting than Glee. I mean, Glee's funny and great, and the musical aspect of it is so cool, but I really love, like, there was something very deep and like had never been done on television before, I guess, with Popular, which was really cool. But I think when I got to Talladega, I don't know, I just was like hanging on with like, just like hanging on for dear life and just going, okay, I'm going to be in these scenes with Will Ferrell. And he's such a generous person. And Adam McKay is such a generous director. And I remember Molly Shannon kept going, where did you study improv? And I was like, I didn't. And so I think it really has to do with like William Esper.
Will and Kristen also have such this amazing chemistry, which we've seen from SNL. We see whenever they link up.
Did you see them on the Golden Globes with that thing?
Of course. Oh,
very funny. Definitely the highlight of the Globes.
And that hatching from like a song on her iPhone that she was listening to. I was like that to me is, that's, you know, that's a very, because I bet you nobody at the Golden Globes got what they were doing. I'm sure that they were like, you're going to do 2 minutes of a bit, a 2 minute bit of like this song and somehow it's going to work. And what they did, I mean, and everyone says it's the most interesting part of the Golden Globes.
Yeah, they let it breathe too, in an unusual way for a bit in an award show. It was cool to see.
Yeah, I think that was really Kristen and Will saying, trust us. And they did. And thank God they did. Because when Kristen broke down, she looked like a little broken doll. Like she was so doing that dance. She's so good physically. I mean, he too is just, they're both geniuses. They're so good. Mm.
I was going to say, something that's fascinating to me is when people take to method acting and when they don't. Like, I feel like I hear just as many quotes from actors being like, you know, or, you know, someone like Isabelle Huppert, for example, like just wanders into a scene and she's just entirely imperious and commanding and it works for her. Why do you think, like you're saying, Meisner was like very helpful for you? What is it about formal acting lessons that helped you?
I think it gives you an arsenal. I think, if when I show up, I probably screw it up and some people are like, she's a terrible actor. I don't really care if you think that, but like the work I do is I do a lot of fucking work on my scripts and all my stuff. And, I don't know, you just should, I just remember Maggie saying you should go to every job. You should have an arsenal. You should have like, you know, if you have an objective in a scene, there's a lot of ways you can go about getting it. There's a lot of actions you can do to get what you want. There's more than one way, as you know, to skin a cat. I don't know what that means, but you know what that means. I mean, it's terrible. I don't know why we're skinning cats, but there are. And so your job as an actor is just to have like an arsenal of ideas. And I think that it just prepares you. I mean, for me, I think, you know, there's some actors who can show up and do zero work and they're incredible. For me, I have to be incredibly like memorized and ready and prepare like painstakingly so that when I get there, I can throw it all away and take it off the other person. And somewhere in my body, those ideas, it's all percolating and hopefully, you know, sometimes it really lines up and something magical happens.
Mm-hmm. I always find it interesting, you know, to ask actors as well, not just what you've learned from the people that you work with on set and everything, mm-hmm. but, you know, you are with an actor, you know, Sam Rockwell. And I always have to wonder about two artists who live together, what that process is like, where, you know, whether it's even watching each other's work or whether it's even, you know, like reading scripts with one another, is that something that you enjoy doing together, or is it a completely separate, we keep our work lives different?
No, we're completely codependent on each other in that way. Just like, I mean, you know, my favorite thing, I mean, for me to do is to have Sam be my reader when I audition for stuff. He read with me for my callback on Palm Royale, I was actually doing this Clint Eastwood movie, and I was for White Lotus, and Chris Messina, who happens to be Sam's best friend, I was in the movie with me. So Chris taped my audition, and Sam was my reader, and I was like, God, I've got like an A team right now of getting me ready for this audition. But I don't know. I love to read stuff. He's so great. I mean, I get annoyed with him when he gives me some stuff, and I'm like, that's a terrible idea, you know. But then he's like, just try it. But like, yeah, we read everything together. He values my opinion. I value his opinion. We help each other get off book. I'm really good at helping him get off book and memorize his lines. We are very immersed in that. And I thought forever it would be the worst idea to date an actor. Mm-hmm. And then I wouldn't date actors. And then I would date these people and then they would get mad at me for like having to do a love scene, which now when I look back, I'm like, that is so dumb. Why was I with that person? I had an old boyfriend who made me buy him something. When I did a love scene.
Oh like, my God. Like,
you need to buy me something. And I know, it was such, how dumb am I? It's not him. I mean, anybody can ask for something, but how dumb was I that I was like, okay, that's it. Yeah. Instead of being like, you know, get over it. It's a job. I mean, love scenes are truly like the most unromantic, unsexy thing, especially because you've got like, you know, some boom operator standing by you like this, and you've got like a lighting, you know, but they're so awkward. But I thought I would never date one. And then I started dating one. And then I was like, why didn't you do this sooner? This was actually a brilliant idea. But I mean, Sam's really special. So I don't know if every actor is like Sam.
No, I can't imagine.
When they're that good at dancing, too, I mean, I would just stick with it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's a really good dancer. Sometimes we went to, like, he Was that the Oscars this week? He had to.
Oh, he presented. He was one of the. Yes.
Presented. Mm-hmm. That is the verb. He presented. And then, so you go to like some of the parties, and I was really like out of my mind with jet lag. But we went to the Vanity Fair party, and then I was like, I gotta go home. And as we're walking out, finally the DJ played some good music. And as we're leaving, he's like, baby, we gotta dance. So we were like just dancing, not even on the dance floor, like by this like weird screen. We were just dancing, and people were like, what are you guys doing? You look like two weirdos. I don't know. I love that he dances. He just can't stop himself.
You just mentioned The White Lotus, and obviously there's nothing we can know about this show yet. We're in the third season. You just said you got back from Thailand, if I'm not mistaken. But I can ask about Mike White, who I feel like is just one of the most ideal TV makers there is. Like he's seemingly so creative and knows how to like cast and like enable actors to do something awesome. Name a lot of people we're familiar with, or we haven't seen them do this kind of stuff. What was your experience working with him?
Thus far, really incredible. I wish for everybody to have a Mike White experience because he's so smart. It's really cool to do work on something where it's written by and directed by. So I've never had that. Like it usually doesn't happen with television. You know, usually like a couple of episodes are done by your creator. And then just because of time, you know, you can't have that. And so that luxury to have his vision guide you, and he's so specific and he's so generous and he's so smart. And his writing is like, it's like a fucking laser beam. I mean, he's just, I don't know. I feel very, very, very fortunate. I think to get to work with Abe Sylvia, who is my showrunner on Palm Royale, to get to say that man's words, which are, I think, equally funny and amazing and well-written, but just stylized because it's 1969. And then to get the luxury to get to work with Mike on Lotus is just like kind of a weird pinch me moment for me. Like I just artistically, I'm like, I feel like I should go out and buy lottery tickets every day because I feel like lucky. I feel like where's the four leaf clover? Where did I put it? Like it's somewhere on me somewhere. But yeah, I mean, between like him and Abe, like Abe Sylvia, with the world he created with Palm Royale is just, it's so great. You know, it's great when somebody gives you a pretty lengthy chunk of dialogue and you can memorize it like that. That's when you know writing's really, when writing is very difficult to memorize, you're like, oh, it's because something's unnatural. And I found on like Palm Royale, because Abe loves like a chunk of like something said and said fast and quippy. And it's just like so easy to memorize and to do and to make active because he's really, this world he created for Palm Royale is, I saw the first episode last week and I don't know, it was just like bubbly and bubblegum and delicious and like a dessert you want to eat. And all the characters, and you've got to wait, it's a pretty big cast and like it unfolds, but it's pretty delicious and it just constantly takes turns and turns and people are catty and bratty and desperately seeking a sense of community. And I don't know, it's really
fun.
Can
I tell you something though, based on how like cunningly articulate you are, I have the feeling you memorize most stuff pretty quickly. You've got to be one of those crackerjack people.
I don't. If it's good, I memorize it quickly. I mean, if you see me in New York, I talk to myself all the time, or I'm listening to my lens. I mean, I do a lot of like, I work on it because it doesn't always come easy. But when it comes easy, I always know it's because of the writing. Because it's just easy. Like if something is well written, it's just like, boom, it just gets into your brain a bit. And like Mike's writing is like that, and Abe's writing and the writers of Palm Royale, because Abe did not write everyone, he oversaw it, but we have like our writer's room on Palm Royale was very fucking fierce. And like, so cool. So I hope we get a second season, because I think what they're going to do is like just going to light up a lot.
And also the resort wear alone. I mean, we need another season of that. Yeah.
Guys, I got to play like on like, I don't know what, like a Valium. I mean, there's so much fun drug impediment you get to do. Like, we're like popping reds and like drinking and playing golf, and Wig and I are on like this golf cart. And back then they only had three wheels. The fact that it didn't overturn us somehow was like an act of God. And then like they made a Vespa, like a Vespa specially made for Ricky Martin. So it had a, like he could ride around on a Vespa and give you drinks and make drinks for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm in like vintage Givenchy, and our costume designer on this alone and the set designer, the Giancarlo's, like that too is like a feast for the senses watching that for the show. It's really fun.
Mm. Well, it's so much fun to see you in a show like this again. And, you know, I would be remiss before you left to not tell you how much I really enjoyed GCB too. And it's a show I bring up constantly.
You did? Oh.
Yes.
Can I tell you, Bobby Harling, who created that show, again, another amazing man who writes for like women and wrote a show with so many women.
Annie Potts, Kristen Chenoweth.
Yes.
So Bobby Harling wrote Steel Magnolias, which is, you know, and did he do the First Wives Club? And he did Soap Dish, which I love. I mean, Bobby Harling, we email still, and he's just like another amazing person, like an amazing man who loves women and loves to write for women. And I got so lucky to be. I love that you love that show. I fell in love with Kristen Chenoweth on that show, and still like that girl is so talented. I remember she started singing, and I was like, God, you have a really good voice. And she goes, she would call me Legs, and I would call her Snack because she's so little, I'm so tall. And I would go, and I said, Snack, you can really sing. And she goes, Legs. You know that? What do you mean? And I was like, she goes, what are you saying? I said, well, no. She goes, don't you know? Like, have you not seen Wicked? And I was like, and she goes, did you not see whatever the Charlie Brown? I won a Tony for that. And I was like, and she goes, what did you think I was? And I go, I just thought you were an actor. And she was like, that's the nicest thing anybody's ever done. I remember she was like, you just think I'm an actor? And I was like, yeah. And so I just thought you were this great actress who had these like amazing comedic chops. I had no idea. Of the opera singing, the singing in like 87 languages, the like perfect pitch, all of that stuff. Like none of it. I just thought, oh, who is this little tiny dancer Spitfire comic genius that is Kristen Chenoweth? And then all of a sudden she opens her mouth and I was like, holy God, what's, you know, opera? She's so wee. She's so tiny. And then it's like,
it does feel mathematically impossible. I don't understand really how that works.
It is it doesn't make sense to me at all. She's so little and has like, she must sing from her toes. Like, because I just like her diaphragm can't even be that big. I don't know where she gets the breath.
No, she has my favorite version of my Funny Valentine, too, which go ahead and look that up. That's a treat for all the listeners. Go ahead and listen to that.
Okay. I know. She's such a, I mean, I've been really lucky. Like, what amazing, like, Kristen Wiig, Kristen Chenoweth, you know, Carly Pope. I've been really lucky to have such nurturing, incredible women, Annie Potts, like, you know, to get to work with and learn from, you know. So that I feel really lucky. It's like, because that's all, I mean, sort of with jobs, that's what I look for anymore. I mean, Kim Cattrall played my mother on this movie I did with Robert De Niro. I just had a stroke, guys. With Robert De Niro.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
I'm like,
yes.
And I'm like, and I'm on that movie and I'm like, what's happening? What's happening? Like, I don't know, Kim Cattrall, like, I mean, I still was like, I loved Mannequin. I loved like Big Trouble in Little China. Like, she's and Sex and the City, obviously, mm-hmm. but like, you know, she's so great. And like, you get to have these experiences with these people. And that's what's so fun about working, like, to get to be in scenes with those people and just learn from them in the scenes, because, you know, it's like AP class.
I feel like when we do these interviews, like, the dream is that somebody is actually having this much fun doing this stuff. So it's extremely gratifying to hear that. And also, of course, you are a masterclass actor yourself. So please don't be underestimating the fact that you're around these people who I'm sure are like gadzooked by how rad you are. So
I'm not sure they all are, but that's a very nice thing to say. But it's really fun. You get to, like, there's so many. I mean, it's the great thing. I mean, you know, actors we're the worst sometimes. You know, it's like, you give us a job and we complain, and you don't give us a job and we complain. So, like, I'm trying to, in this phase of my life, to be very grateful and, like, just be excited to every time you walk onto a set, you know. I mean, maybe that was something that really came from the strike happening, from not, you know, like, not to suddenly have work stop, and you realize how much I feel lucky that I get to do what we do, because, you know, I really love it. It's, you know, I don't know people are like, what else would you do if you weren't an actor? And I was like, I don't know. The last real job I had was like babysitting. Like, I don't know. I have no skill set whatsoever. This is it. Like, if this doesn't work out, I'm coming to you guys to be like your craft service.
Nothing wrong with that.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. I'll make you a really good latte.
Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, my gosh. Please join us again. What a pleasure. And also, you're so good on Palm Royale. So good.
Thank you so much. I love that show. I really do. I hope people tune in.
It's out now when people are listening.
Come
it's
on,
out
guys.
Now.
Yes. Go get some apple in your life. Come on. It'll be fun. All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much for joining us. We so appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, guys.
Having a teen feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 422 through 428. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
Live life at your pace. Click the banner or go to visitwilliamsburg.com to discover how. Because here in Williamsburg, life moves at one pace, yours. Here, our waters are splashing and rejuvenating. Our history is for seeing and experiencing. Our theme parks are for riding and sometimes flying. And our great outdoors are yours for exploring and restoring. It's all waiting for you in Williamsburg. Book your trip today and live life at your pace.
If you tune into Keep It on YouTube every week to see which iconic female vocalist Lewis is wearing on his shirt.
Oh, it's Vanity Six Day here. Denise, may you rest.
Then this segment is for you. We're diving into some of our favorite fashion designers, brands, like basically where we get our clothes, because people are asking. This is for the YouTube watchers. So, you know, if you're listening on the podcast, if you're listening on the iPod, maybe you need to fire up YouTube.
How about that? Oh, yeah. Use your imagination. What could we be wearing? I know you picture straight 90s Versace, but that's not what we're wearing.
Where do you get these shirts, Lewis, actually? You know, I love a band tee. You know me. But I, you know, I like the merch, you know, I like being, you know, I'm at the venue, I'm in the line, I'm looking at the board, I'm getting the shirts, and then I love wearing those again later, because then I like, you know, I like a vintage tee.
Yeah,
and I was vintage if it's from, yeah. But where are you getting these?
I mean, like up around, like all my Kylie Minogue stuff, I get directly from the source. I would never get fake material from her. This stuff, I mean, I'll straight up Google a shirt. I don't care. My problem is with merch. I find there are few occasions to wear it. Like if I'm like at a daytime party at like Akbar on the East Side, and like you're hanging out with a bunch of fags, and like, you know, you want to rep something in that case. Like if I'm wearing a Vanity 6 shirt, you kind of know what I'm about, I think. And so it says something about you, and it's social and it's fun. But otherwise, like I work with mostly straight people. If I'm wearing like a Kylie Minogue shirt around them, I may as well be wearing like something that's like, I may as well be wearing like Korean words or something. Like they just would not even see it. They wouldn't even, recognize it. But I just, to me, it's important to care about, like, have a point of view on artists you like. And so I hope it's like conversation starting, whatever, you know, I'm wearing. I mean, like, I don't think it's like provocative what I'm wearing, but, you know, if it engenders a conversation, I'm into it.
What about you, Michael? Like, what is your, you know, sartorial choices?
You know, I'm trying to break out of the New York transient and exile in LA all black look. I'm doing that today, but I do love a lot of tour merch, and I will search out old and new. I prefer to go to the shows, but like I like to dig through like crates online if I can find it. Mm. But I am trying to let go of dressing like a 90s drug dealer, which is also my aesthetic. So, and I noticed watching Potomac, which I know is not the greatest season, but sometimes I'm like, oh, wow, do I dress like Juan? So like with purple, I like the purple label. Shout out to my friend Dre that works there. like Noah, Reese Cooper, things like that are really comfortable. But I'm actually trying to figure out, which is funny, I'm turning 40 next month. So I'm like, what am I giving in this decade? So I'm actually trying to figure out what is that going to be like? Because I don't want us to come to that particular older black male demo when he just goes straight to like sweatsuits all the time. So I'm trying to get out of that. And actually I did, I had a fun shoot that I did with the LA Times magazine Image, and they put me in all these nice clothes and back in color. And I was like, oh, I forgot I used to wear a lot of color. So I'm honestly trying to figure out how do I want to like dress the rest of the year, but mostly lately it's just been kind of given Juan Dixon. I say Juan Williams, but I meant Juan Dixon from Potomac. Like that 40-year-old black man who doesn't want to try too hard, but like look very, yeah, I gotta let go of the 90s drug dealer aesthetic. It's held me down for the last couple of years, but I'm trying to figure out what that looks like. So you might just see me in big, I don't know, Britney Spears tees and a bunch of color. But I'm working on it.
Can I tell you something, though? If I woke up tomorrow and all my wardrobe were replaced with black clothing, I would be pretty psyched about it. I just think there's something about black clothing where it's like you literally pop in whatever environment you're in. Like it's like it's like an interior design choice for wherever you're going. I don't know. It makes sense to me.
I really got into the uniform, and I would try to dress it up in my little ways. Like I wear all black, but I still do like a little pop of color somewhere if like it calls. But for the most part, I really got into black, which was not my thing for the most part. This is more fairly recent, but it's just easier. Like it's just so much easier, and I like the uniform. But my friends are like, please go back to color. Like it's giving big bereavement energy right now, but like give me another month. I think I'm going to try to push myself back into, like, the color. My mom liked me in color anyway.
Yeah, you know, everyone goes through, like, the seagull phase, you know, where they're dressing in mourning. But, I don't know, for me, I have a lot of... I like the choices of, like, you know, like, a woman on the shirt. Like I said, I like the merch. I also like a throwback 90s thing. Maybe not drug dealer 90s look, you know, maybe... MTV's The Grind, you know,
that's
a general like vibe. You know, I'm in like a sweater now, grind, which I got from Instagram. I'm also an Instagram buyer, unfortunately.
Oh, me too. I honestly, I think that may be the best thing about Instagram. I mean, like, you know, it's like, well, it's like, these are the clothes I want to wear and they found me. So it's actually helpful.
Yeah.
I know I'm like part of the system and like, we're all going to be dead soon, but okay.
Yeah. I too am part of the problem. I'm like, oh, y'all clocked me that I'm trying to change. You must, your spying is working out because you're sending me in the direction of the right stores and products. So thank you.
Yeah.
But they also find weird things in your taste that you may sort of like. Like, I don't know, this is from some brand called Pleasing. I'm wearing a blue sweater with like a big heart on the side of it. And it just, it popped up in the Instagram. I also have a pair of shorts, which I wore like out this weekend in New York because it was sunny, and they will become Fire Island shorts this summer for sure. Oh, they are,
yes.
They are shorts that say... There are shorts made to look like the box of a Newport cigarette box because Instagram knows that I smoke Newports. So they were like, you know what? Maybe you would like shorts that are that box. And I put them on and I had them out Sunday. And then people were like, those are really cute. Those are campy. Those look ridiculous. And I was like, you know what? Instagram got me.
Also,
let me
say
campy and ridiculous.
If you're going to Fire Island, by the way, this summer, do not pack a single pair of long pants. I have made this mistake before. Like, I don't know what, like, formal dinner I think I'm going to get myself into in Fire Island. Girlfriend, it is a shorts zone. Please. Yeah.
Which reminds me, I actually really love the John Elliott shorts.
Oh, I'm wearing John Elliott pants right now. Yes.
Mm. Yeah, I love their shorts. They actually have helped me out of my black a little bit. Or if I'm going to wear some parts of black, then I can have that pop of color. They're like perfect. Yes, I need to get into the pants, but I'm really trying to be like, I'm going to use these legs until they fall off for the rest of the summer.
I'm wearing right now like this like kind of cargo pant with like a elastic bottom. Let me say this. I feel like this something that's nice about John Elliott, and it's pricey. Like you're throwing down for like these clothes, generally speaking. But I feel like it's the most acceptable version of something that Chloe Sevigny brought up. And I feel like I'm still recovering from how fucking right she was when she said that she doesn't like New York because, quote, the dogs and the athleisure have taken over. And let me say this. athleisure, first of all, is a concept that's now feeling a little 2010s to me. Like, I don't know how much longer we can really do it. But there's also just something like a little icky about like everybody seeming too comfortable all the time. Like there's no sense of occasion to fashion when everybody looks like they're just going to and from a gym class. That said, I feel like if you can get like a significant nylon pants with like good pockets and stuff, it feels a little bit more substantial, a little bit less like, you know, your yoga mommy. You know what I'm saying?
If I'm going athleisure as well, I feel like you need to commit to the entire bit of it all. You know, there's a difference in just wearing like Adidas track pants and just then like a hoodie or like a t-shirt. As opposed to if I'm out wearing Adidas track pants, I'm also wearing the track jacket. I'm also wearing Adidas. I'm wearing Stan Smiths right now. You know, I feel like you commit to the entire look. So you're giving, you know, I mean, I do look like I'm in Run DMC often, especially because I'm in my gold chain era, but at least commit to that look so it doesn't feel like you're just scrounging things from your closet and running to the grocery store.
Right. Don't just put on Adidas. Belong in the Missy Elliott video. Yes, precisely.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
Yes.
I finally bought some Jordans. It's like the name of your book. Are there any clothing items that you all remember from being a kid that you were like, I really want this, and maybe you never got it, and now you've had a chance to revisit it?
I always wanted to wear like the significant Doc Martin heavy shoes of like everybody I idolized in the 90s. Just like everybody had, to quote the song
Daria.
To quote the song Ring of Keys from Fun Home, everybody had a bearing about them. You know what I'm saying? Like everybody had just like heavy and walking, and, you know, even like Sinead O'Connor, who, you know, was sort of a, she would like a little top and like kind of heavy jeans, but then the shoes were always heavy. Like that was like part of the look. I didn't think in LA there would ever be like really a moment for that, you know, just because everybody is sort of somewhat related to coastal beachy attire or whatever. I find that I see it all the time now in this era where everybody has gigantic pants. So I'm sort of, I'm psyched that that's happened. So I'm always in the market for new cool boots.
I bought my first big, like, I like those Doc Martin ones, and I feel like, who was it? Oh, one of our mutual friends, Noah Buck, he was visiting New York and truly was wearing some. And he told me, you need to buy these. You look good in them. And I got them off of like DocMarten.com then. And now I wear them and I'm like, I do love them. They are a heavy shoe though.
Yeah, right.
When you put on a Doc Marten, you sort of really have to be like, maybe you're going out for the evening, but they cannot be a New York all-day shoe. You can't run errands in Doc Martens.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. No, it's like going out. It's a good significant shoe for going out. By the way, Noah Buck is good. Somebody you can, just this the friend of ours that Ira just mentioned, he is somebody you can trust for fashion advice. Everybody at his party looks like they belong in The Sims Live in Large Expansion Pack. I'm telling you, they're all like moon print pants. Here comes a fortune teller. Just like every kind of character is there.
And what about you, Michael?
Well, I finally bought some Jordans, but I actually still haven't bought the particular pair I write about.
Okay,
not able to get, but I am going to finally get them. Actually, probably tomorrow. The Jordan 11s. I really want the white and black patterned leather ones and the cool grays. I feel like I'll have finally reached back into that part of my childhood that I couldn't get, and mm-hmm. then move along. But like it's those two that I still want. Like just. For me, just, I don't know, it's, you'll read, if you buy the book, like, you'll get it, but it's just enough to let me think, like, you're not that person, like, growing up without and all of that, so I think once I get those, I'll feel a little bit better, but for the most part, everything outside of the, like, Jordan thing that I wanted and couldn't get, I eventually worked my way to get it, but those two are, like, still, like, I never quite got it, so I'm trying to still finish that soon, so that'll make me feel better, and I need big pants, so thank you for reminding me, Lewis.
Yes, get on.
Yeah,
it.
Big pants are back. You know, I bought some Carhartts for the first time, and I was walking around in them, and I was like, I mean, I feel like a painter,
like Murphy like Brown's friend. Right. Yeah.
I feel like I'm wearing Janko jeans, and I don't know. Maybe it was a thing that came from, you know. I feel like recently in working out more, like and losing weight and things, and like bigger jeans. Feel better now. I mean, I feel like when I was a kid, you know, I was like, I didn't want to wear like big jeans because like you're walking around looking like, you know, like you're hiding a high school baby or something, you know?
No.
Very teen mom.
I still have to get over the associations I have with baggy clothes because obviously when you're in like middle school in 1999 or whatever, if that was like the clothes of the enemy, right? Like the guy who would bully you or whatever. Like everybody in some form or another had to dress like they had heard of the X Games. That is your life in 1999. The Backstreet Boys all look like they're coming off the slopes. You know what I'm saying? So I'm still getting over I still fucking remember in like 2013 or 14 when Lorde performed at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because she was inducting Nirvana and she sang Smells Like Teen Spirit or whatever. And she was wearing giant, I think, pink pants or whatever. And I just fucking knew that would be the pants we all wore for the next decade. And I'm still a little bit burned about it. But I found a version. I feel like, again, like a sort of drapey cargo pant that's like thin. That's a version of voluminous I can do that isn't like... contrived. I hate dressing and feeling contrived. And by the way, that's my problem with a lot of fashion on Instagram is we're in this world of like you can borrow from a stylist and give it back. And so everybody can try on whatever wild look they want for whatever photo they get out of it. And it doesn't say anything about them personally. I hate fashion like that. I crave people like Tilda Swinton who belong in crazy clothes. So I'm just want to put a message out there. Please, if you're going to do something zany, make sure it actually pertains to who you are as a person and doesn't just look good in a picture. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. I'm also put out there before we close that. I love a fit pick. Yeah. Okay. I don't need a fit pick if the fit isn't fitting. Okay? I don't have to do it every day. Yeah. At some point when some people are doing like a get ready with me or like here's a fit pick, I'm like, okay. It's just some clothes.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, like, oh,
and
shorts,
I'm tired of
right.
getting ready with certain people.
Right.
They know who they are.
I'm ready without you. Yeah, yeah. I'm out the door. Yeah.
All right, when we are back, the Keep It segment. All right, we are back with our favorite segment of the episode. It is Keep It. Michael, as our guest, what are you saying Keep It to this week?
Okay, Vanderpump Rules. So this show actually brought me out of a dark period in my life a few years ago. I was like, oh, this is like white love and hip hop. Love it. Last season, caught up all in Scandoval, supported all the pot cause, whatever. This season, whoa. To your, you mentioned this earlier about, you know, forgiving white men too easily. We don't need all this with Sandoval. Lala and Sheena, I'm looking at you. While it's certainly okay to give in forgiveness, and I, of all people, understand about suicidal ideation, I write about that in the book. Losing
beautifully,
people, suicide,
by the way.
My own friends. Thank you. I truly appreciate that. So I understand in theory, like, not want to egg it on, but, like, why are we at the point where, like, you're alienating the actual person who was afflicted by this horrible man who is not at all, he doesn't care. It's obvious. He doesn't want to do any work. And now the season is, like, so lopsided. I just feel like the show could have went another direction where it could have been, like, more female forward. They could have stood behind Ariana and lifted her up and maybe took the show in a different direction. Now I'm remembering why this show should have probably ended sooner than it did pass, because it's starting to get now, like, where it's people my age or slightly older just stuck. And it is annoying to watch. And clearly I was catching up with Vanderpump Rules on the plane on the book tour, so it's heavy on my heart. But Ariana, I'm with you, even though Shayna and Lala are not. And LVP, stop always taking up for the men. It's annoying. It's not good TV. And the mid-season trailer looks better, but as of now, you can keep the season.
A thing that's always so interesting about a show like that, and then like some of our housewives, right? Where it's when a show goes on for too long, that's scripted, there are at least ways to fix it, adding in new people, et cetera, new storylines. But like when a show is going on for so long and it's unscripted, you're at a certain point where you're just watching, the point of watching them is the fact that they filmed this show.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So there's, you're not getting anything else really out of the interactions. If there's, especially a show like Vanderpump Rules, where they're, it's hard to add in new people because it really is a friend group. You know, it was never like the Housewives shows on Bravo's where, you know, people are axed or fired because, you know, they're not serving the show.
Or crimes against humanity or whatever. Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah.
And the thing about this season, too, I would agree with you, is very much also giving the women, first of all, it's giving that these people are jealous of the fact that Ariana became so famous after the Scandoval. And two, it's giving, they all sort of know and kind of can sense she's probably not coming back after this season. You know, like, she's done. She's here to open. Ariana is here to open her restaurant with Katie, and then she gonna bounce. Yes. You know, because there's she should be hosting things. She should be just doing other stuff without being on a show with these people who are now, some of them coming back to be on this other show, The Valley, or something, you know? So a lot of the Tom stuff, too, feels like they are hedging their bets on a person who will probably still be on Vanderpump Rules in season 19.
Yeah, I won't be there for that, but yes.
I will absolutely not either. I'm barely there this season.
Right. I just want a sandwich at this point. Open up that shop, y'all. I'm ready.
Okay, yes. Okay. That is the one thing I have to say to Ariana Maddox. I'm like, there's something about her sandwich shop. I need it to be open. I want a sandwich. I want to taste it. Like, I want to get in line. I want to support you, girl. But, like, got me waiting on this sandwich, you know. Anyway. Lewis, what is your keep? We're mad about reality shows and sandwiches.
Right. No, understandable. My keep it this week is surprising, even to me, which is, so I guess recently after the Oscars last week, Bill Maher fired his reps at CAA for not getting him into an Oscars party. And people are sort of tee-heeing at him and, you know, being like, what a fucking brat. And what a weird reason to axe your reps after having them for 20 years or something. I am so sorry. This is the only relatable thing he has ever done to me. Like, I'm sorry. Our good friend of the podcast and my one of my best friends, Diablo Cody, has a Substack now where she kind of talks about this, but she's like, Oscar parties are like an extremely sensitive issue in LA. There's like, you know, it's like, I mean, it's like you're in or you're out. Like she invokes a Chris Rock routine where she says, like, sometimes you're on the yacht and sometimes you're waving from the pier and you better be okay with both. I thought she like articulated this particular FOMO sensation really well. But I just want to say, it's like, if this is finally the thing that gets you upset at Bill Maher, how about you read any other headline about this man? Because that's actually infuriating. Please. Bill Maher and John Cleese rail against the New York Times. Sad it's no longer a great newspaper. Bitch, who asked you? You don't know about fucking anything or anyone. You don't belong in any fucking conversation. Literally, maybe except with the caterers at the CIA Oscar party that you weren't even invited to. I just think he is among late night hosts the biggest shame in the history of the medium. He has never once apologized. And I think it's like a real masculine pride issue he has that has now bubbled over into this everybody's wrong but me thing. Somebody who uses the word woke and means it. Just an upsetting person altogether. I, unfortunately, if my reps after hundreds of years of being on the air and mixing with these celebrities couldn't get me into a CAA party, I would be pissed too.
That's tea, you know.
Don't ever tell me that's tea again. Kudos to you, Lewis. Thanks for spilling. Yeah.
But the party invites are... they're hard, girl.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, and especially when you're, what, I haven't been to the Vanity Fair Oscar party, but when you watch the arrivals too, and then you see everyone dropping their photo of getting, you know, like on that, I always love the Vanity Fair red carpet for that party because they're always standing on this circle. This is Vanity Fair.
Right. Yeah. It's very, know, like, lush. It looks very, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It looks very chic. And then you just look at all these people going and you're like, well, damn, how big is this fucking party?
No. Right. Literally, yeah. Where are they standing? It's like the Met Gala. Like, and you're all wearing these gigantic gowns. There can't be room for this. It seems crazy.
Yeah, and then you also think about the people who are at the party who, you talk about the Diablo Cody thing about sometimes you're on the yacht and sometimes you're waving. But with these parties too, there is also the, sometimes you're on the yacht, but you go in through the back entrance.
Yes.
Because no one cares about watching you walk onto the yacht.
Yeah, right. Right.
And you got to be okay with that too, you know? Because there's also the thing of you come to the event and it's like, no one is screaming, hey, turn here, take a photo, whatever. You know, it's just like, you just keep it pushing and you just got to be okay with that too. Just, I just like the free liquor.
Right,
you
no,
know,
precisely.
The drinks.
Right, right. No, you I know? Don't need to dress in like, you know, a gorgeous, utterly slim robe like Timothy Chalamet or something. You know, and it's just like, you just simply want to be there. If you're a part of the conversation at one point, you want to stay in the conversation. That said, I'm sure, yes, Bill Maher has the biggest ego in the history of the universe. So I can also understand, yeah, his reaction being overblown to the people personally he dealt with. Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he did spill a bit about the New York Times currently.
Okay.
But
he and John Cleese, truth to power. Yeah, yeah. The circus is still flying, girl. Yeah.
But I do like the New York Times games section.
Oh, okay. Please. No, the crossword every day, please.
Yeah, the Wordle, the connections. I made a connections game for my friends this weekend. So
look at you.
That was fun. I also organized a game of Traitors for 24 people.
I played a game of Traitors myself and got to the final round. And because of a weird immunity issue, I didn't win. But if that weren't there, I would have won the whole thing. And I would have, you know, as
you
would
expect. Faithful?
I was a faithful,
were
yes. You? They should have eliminated, okay, me. It was a Trishel situation. I should have been taken out much earlier. Yeah.
See, three Traitors made it to the final.
Holy
and
shit.
And the one I organized it. I didn't play as a faithful or a traitor, but three made it in. And it was, this is the thing that happens with when people are playing with one another who are friends, and which is sort of what you get on these shows too, because like you have a CT, Trishel, you like, mm-hmm, you have like Sheree, Phaedra, like people with pre-established connections. Sometimes you don't want to vote out people, you know?
Right.
It's like, I remember at one point, like, they realized, it was my friend Charlie and Trey's birthday, and everyone realized that Charlie was one of the traitors, but people were like, well, it's his birthday, and like, we're not going to vote him out because he'll be in a bad mood all weekend if he is kicked out.
Oh, faggot, so, Charlie would have been on the curb if I were playing. I play, like,
murdered.
Yeah, right.
And it is banished. It is so fun to also watch people playing it too, even just from the organizing standpoint, because my friend Trey and his boyfriend Jordan were not traitors. They were faithfuls. And I was watching them both arguing with each other all weekend about, you know, believing each other was a traitor, whether they're lying. And I'm like, both of you are faithfuls. You're having this argument for nothing.
Yeah. No, it's fun to watch from the outside. That's the nice thing about that game. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you take each other out because you're focused on trying to get each other out when you need to be focused on finding the other traitors.
Can I say one boring thing about the fucking traitors? I'm watching the UK season 2 right now. Nothing upsets me more than when somebody tries to pick somebody else as a traitor and they're like, well, he acted really fucking weird when he did this. The traitors are never acting weird. The whole thing is they're your friend. They're acting they're like your friends. Why do you think that? It's so weird.
Living up to the name.
I think.
I very much hope that when we go into like third seasons of all these international versions of the traitors, there is finally someone at the round table saying the actual ways you figure out a traitor, because they're always going with like you said, oh, you said something differently, or like, I think that they've been shady the way you're attacking people at the round table. I'm like, 7 times out of 10, the traitor is the person that you trust. They're sitting around the round table. They're agreeing with everybody else. They're not doing anything out of the ordinary.
Right,
they're trying to be undetected.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Not so much that they're Dan Giesling, who was doing too much of like not being involved and offering up names. So I'm like, girl, it is not the person who is acting over the top the most. Like, the traitors are keeping them in.
Right. No, you need to figure out who's having a secret dialogue. Like, who at the table is not, like, expressing something to another player because they have another dialogue going. You have to be thinking about what's actually on these people's mind. Anyway, Ira, what is your keep it?
My keep it is also reality related.
Okay.
It's a whole reality episode. My keep it is going to this season, so far, of Survivor. Girl, there's this player on this season named Banu, who is, I am sorry, it's sometimes nice to watch people flame out and implode on reality TV, but when you're watching a competition series like Survivor, you're really watching it because you like the characters and personalities, but you also like the gameplay that is happening. This man is so stressful to watch on TV. He's like sobbing constantly. It's unpleasant. I don't like it. There's this great player, Tiff, who's on his tribe, and she, last week at Tribal, 2 weeks ago at Tribal, she said something that truly friends of mine texted. They said, this probably would be you playing the game. You would say this. He gets up in the middle of Tribal, goes over to her. He's like, I'm not being voted out, am I? Like paranoid, even though they had come up with a plan to get rid of this other girl. And she tells him, stop making the block hot.
Yes.
And I don't even think he knew what that meant. But when you hear, you know, so there's just some slang where, like, even if you don't know what the person's saying, the way they say it, the way they look at you, it's like, stop making the block hot. He got up and went back over and sat down in his seat. So I don't know. This season is stressing me out. I also want to point out that the tribe that Banu's been on has lost all 3 episodes so far. And the only reason he didn't go home in the third one was because someone got injured on another another tribe. And so there wasn't a vote out. Stop having 3 tribes on US Survivor 2, because then there's always going to be one that's losing constantly. And it's just, it's not fun to watch. We need 2 tribes. Also, it's fine. Someone's, you know, medevaced out because, you know, they were injured, whatever. But I'm also like, this game is 26 fucking days now. They've shortened it. It's like, when you're getting rewards and like family visits or something on US Survivor now, it's like, for what?
You've been there a couple weeks. Yeah.
Okay. You've been on vacation at this point. Okay. In contrast to Survivor Australia, which just wrapped up its season. Last night, I watched the finale this morning. Amazing fucking season of television. I don't want to spoil the winner in case there are Americans who are, you know, you got to get a VPN, you got to do all this shit to watch it. But what an exhilarating finale. They are out there for also 36 days. No, they're out there for like 40 something days or whatever. And it is just amazing gameplay. An amazing season. I loved it start to finish. I cried. I rooted for people. Teared up at certain speeches and moments. And that is just like what Survivor is like and could be. But Jeff Probst has this thing where he is like anti the foreign versions of Survivor because he doesn't want, you know, to besmirch, you know, the U.S. version of it. And so he doesn't want to borrow things from those seasons or something, too. And I'm like, get over it, Jeff.
And also, like, U.S. Survivor hits more often than not. Like, I think he could stand it. Like, if there's a season that doesn't work out, like, there's no shame in being like, oh, yeah, maybe this other place did this particular thing better. Yeah. Michael, are you a Survivor person?
I used to be, but one of my best friends is obsessed with Survivor, so I'm still filled in enough. I'm clued in a little bit, yeah. I need to watch the international versions, though.
They are good. The Survivor Australia is just, like, such a good... The gameplay is great, and honestly, Australia just gives you, like, plenty of himbos. And I miss that on regular Survivor, too. Hot people who are good at the competitions, and they get kicked out, like, post-merge, but they help tribes get to the end. When there are too many super fans on a show like this at some point, it's kind of the opposite of that Vanderpump Rules thing, right? It's just like, when the show's been on for so long, people coming into the game... They're fans of it. Yeah, they love it. So they're playing.
Yeah,
but they're playing differently than someone who's in like season 12 of the show, you know, when it's at the height of its popularity and you just want to be on Survivor. It's very different than people who grew up watching Survivor when they were five with their dad and now they're very excited to play the game. You know, they're coming in with a different mentality.
I want to say also that Australia season one of Traitors is the best season of the show. Absolutely. There's one episode
that
in particular.
Finale?
Oh my, lots going on.
Yes. Yeah. Australia kills it.
International Traitors I should watch. So I'm going to go with Australia.
Australia season one's my favorite. I like the UK too, but like Australia season one's the best season. Yeah.
The host? Get over to
TV. Okay. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the host in Australia is a little whatever.
He's very like Chris Harrison, but Australian. That's what he does. Yeah.
Get over to Peacock, okay? Because Peacock is doing it. Mm-hmm. Peacock is doing it, okay? I haven't even seen that new soap that's out or whatever, but it's called like something like Apples Never Fall or something.
And
I'm just like,
oh yes,
yeah. And I'm just like, I'm hooked by the title alone. I love dumb shit like that. Apples Never Fall. What does that even mean? But I'm going
to
watch.
Right, right. No, we have to tune in order to see. Yes, rooting for Annette. Still sad she didn't win an Oscar, even though she was never a contender for NIAID. Okay, very good.
We love Annette Bening.
Oh, imagine not. And I said she dressed like a Shogun last week. She was like here to like run the Oscars. Yeah.
Yes.
Michael, thank you so much for being here again. It's always a pleasure to have you. And people, go buy. I finally bought some Jordans. Michael's new essay book. It's delightful. It's a great read. It's moving.
It hits some shit hard too. I mean, it's like this book is not for sissies, even though that's exactly what we are. So,
yes, big sissy energy. I am so happy to be on the show. Like I said, I listen to y'all on all my pop walks and hikes, so it's always a pleasure to be on here. I'm really happy y'all like the book, and thank you for reminding me I should really get back into Survivor and to check out the Traitors International because I'm going through Phaedra withdrawal, so y'all gonna help me.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. She really did bring it on that fucking season of the Traitors.
She
it wouldn't have been the
amazing.
Same without her. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank God, because she didn't unmarry to medicine, but that's a story for another. That's a combo for another episode. Thank you to Michael. Thank you to Leslie Bibb for joining us, and we will see you next week. Don't forget to follow Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You can also subscribe to Keep It on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review.
Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our producers are Chris Lord and CJ Siege Polkinghorn. Our executive producers are Ira Madison III, Louis Vertel, and Kendra James. Our digital team is Megan Patzel, Claudia Shang, and Rachel Gajewski. This episode was recorded and mixed by Evan Sutton. Thank you to Matt DeGroot, David Tolles, Kyle Seglin, and Charlotte Landis for production support every week.
Having a teen feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 4/22 through 4/28. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.